OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Tazria, Shabbat Parshat HaChodesh, the fourth of the four special Parshiot. This one combines the single Sedra of Tazria, which is usually joined with Metzora, in 12-month years, whenever there are 13 months, whenever there are two Adars, whenever we have a Shana Me'uberet, also known as a leap year, although that's the one term I don't like, we have several pairs of Sedras that are split in order to give us readings for the extra Shabbatot that the extra month comes with. In any event, Parsha Tazria, relatively small Sedra, I'll be talking a lot about one of the mitzvot that is there but not there. You'll see what I mean later. And Parshat HaChodesh, which speaks of the coming Rosh Chodesh Nisan. In fact, Parshat HaChodesh is always either the Shabbat of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or more commonly, the Shabbat right before. This year it is the day before, so this Shabbat we bench Rosh Chodesh Nisan by announcing that Rosh Chodesh Nisan will be Machar on Yom Rishon, Sunday. And we read a special reading in the Second Torah called the Maftir, which begins with the Psukim of HaChodesh HaZelachim Rosh Chodeshim, this month referring to the month in which the people of Israel left Egypt. The month of Nisan will be the first of the years of the Jewish month. And sure enough, shortly after we read that, we announce Rosh Chodesh, and that evening, it's already Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it's a neat package, and those of you who know Torah Tidbits well, whether it's the audio or the written version, know that one of my particular favorite subjects is the Jewish calendar, which I am not going to dwell on, but I will make a comment about the partnership of Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh, and the fact that we bench Rosh Chodesh Dafka on Shabbat. I read recently someone wrote that originally there was a suggestion that Rosh Chodesh benching the blessing of the new moon be on Rosh Chodesh Day itself, but the suggestion that one was to do it on the Shabbat before, that's when you have more people in shul, and I believe it's more than that, and I'll express that in a moment. But let's just focus in. Today is Yom Chamishi, the recording and first broadcast of the show, Thursday, 27 of Adar Sheni, 5768. On the secular calendar, it is April 3rd. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema Vakoli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmoria Adonai Mia Amod, Ki Imacha Hasalicholama Antivare. Ki Viti Adonai Kivata Navshi Validvaro Hocholti. Navshi Ladonai, Mi Shomarim Laboker, Shomarim Laboker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai Hachesed Vaharbe Imo Fedut. Vehu Yifde et Yisrael, Mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umiafela laora umishibud lgeula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen.
Thank you. Achoydesh, achoydesh al ze, ki nevuas abi choyze,
choyze.
Ishoma, ishoma, bevayi ze. Koy sof soy, vekoy simcha. Chozokim ale, mishaloi seinu.
That was Mutti Kornfeld and Sons with a beautiful prayer song. Interestingly, I've mentioned this in the past, the song even though it refers to the month, actually let me tell you the words of it first in English. May this month be like the prophecy of the father of seers, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, and may there be heard in this house the sound of joy and the sound of gladness. The strong one, a nickname for God, will fill our requests. The firm one, another nickname of God, will implement our prayers, and he will send into our handiwork blessing and success. This prayer does not come from a monthly recitation. It comes from one of the Zmirot, one of the poem songs of Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night. It's sung B'Motzoi Yom Gila, at the departure of the Day of Delight, and yet it includes a petition for a good month. Furthermore, let's look at Rosh Chodesh benching, which will take place this Shabbat, as I already mentioned. We have the opening passage to what we call Rosh Chodesh benching in the Ashkenazi tradition. It's a passage that begins with the words, Yehi Ratzon, may it be God's will. And we ask for all kind of good things. I'll give you an example, or maybe I'll give you more than an example, as we actually take a look at the English translation of the text of the Rosh Chodesh benching, that first passage. Yehi Ratzon Milfonecha, Hashem Elokeinu V'Elokei Avoteinu. May it be your will, God, our God, and the God of our forefathers, that you inaugurate this month upon us for goodness and for blessing. May you give us a long life, a life of peace, a life of goodness, a life of blessing, a life of sustenance, a life of physical health, a life in which there is fear of heaven and fear of sin, a life in which there is no shame nor humiliation, a life of wealth and honor, a life in which we will have love of Torah and fear of heaven, a life in which our heartfelt requests will be fulfilled for the good. Amen, Selah. Now, if you look carefully, except for the very opening sentence, Shetachadesh aleinu et hachodesh hazeh letova v'livracha, that you should inaugurate this month upon us for goodness and blessing, the rest is a petition which has nothing specifically to do with Rosh Chodesh or the month. It is a petition and request for a good life. And in fact, this prayer was composed by Rav, one of the Amoraim from the Talmud, not to be recited once a month at Rosh Chodesh benching, but to be recited every single day. Obviously, it didn't say, Shetachadesh aleinu et hachodesh hazeh. But the rest of it, V'titan lanu chayim arukim, chayim shel shalom, etc., etc., was part of Tfilat Rav for every day. So, the timing of choosing this prayer monthly, of choosing a prayer that mentions a good month, but reciting it or singing it every week, basically points to the fact that we are locked into a flow of time. And for us, we count time now from nanoseconds through seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks and months and years and decades and centuries and millennia. And it all, however, whatever units we choose, it is all a reflection of our journey through time. And all of these prayers can be said every single day. So we do say some of them every day, and some we say on special occasions. And the way stations of our journey through time are marked by special occasions, Shabbat being one of them, Rosh Chodesh being another one of them, holidays, festivals being others. And we have many of these way stations and signposts along this journey that call for a particular prayer to God. So I always found it interesting that the Saturday night liturgy contains a petition for a good month, and this fits very much with the idea of Shabbat being the day that we announce the coming of the month. In fact, Shabbat and the Jewish calendar combine to show us what the meaning of the sanctity of time is. I'm not going to go too far into this topic because I've spoken about it extensively at different times in the past, and I hope to do it in the future again in Mir Tzashem. But let's suffice it to say that Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh are very special partners in conveying the different facets of sanctity of time. And the Haftarah for this week of Parshat HaChodesh has them hand in hand. Navi in Yecheskel tells us, for example, that Ko Amar Hashem Elokim Sha'ar Hechatzer HaPnimit HaPonek Hadim Yihyas Sagur. A certain gate in the temple was closed Sheshet Yemei Ma'aseh for the 6 days of the week. Uviyom HaShabbat Yipateach Uviyom HaChodesh Yipateach. It was open on Shabbat and it was open on Rosh Chodesh. That's one of the many partners between the two. In the Rosh Chodesh, when falls on Shabbat Haftorah, which is not this month, it was last month, but that Haftorah was preempted, but that's another issue. We have there the famous verse, V'hoya midei Chodesh b'chodesho u'midei Shabbat b'shabbato. And it came from month to month and from week to week, or from Shabbat to Shabbat. Yavo chol basar lehishtachavot lefanai, Amar Hashem. God says that all people will come to bow to me. The point is that Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh have a very special partnership. This Shabbat of HaChodesh brings that home because it is dafka on a Shabbat that we take out a second Torah once a year, the Shabbat right before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and we read that very special verse, among others, HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshim, this month of Nisan is the first of your months, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana, it shall be the first of the months of the year to you. Using Shabbat in order to make that statement, to me, solidifies the picture of there being a partnership between the two. I would like now to share with you the mini shiur that I gave the Torah Tidbits folders a very short while ago, and this brings the Torah Tidbits family a little closer together. If you remember at Monday's shiur, I was talking about Havdalah at the Seder, which is a problem because if you light a Havdalah candle and you can't extinguish it, you're going to drain the whole thing. And therefore, most people will make Havdalah and use the Yom Tov candles for the light of Bori Mi'oreho Eish. And I said that maybe we'll have a workshop where we'll take little birthday candles and twist two of them. But somebody went ahead and did it better. This is a product from Neirot Tzfat, Tzfat candles, Safed candles. It's a Havdalah candle for Leil HaSeder. It's labeled Yaknahaz, Yayin Kiddush Ner Havdalah Zman. It says Ner Havdalah LeLeil HaSeder. And it says the base is not flammable. It is a teensy-weensy little Havdalah candle with three colorful candles where you light them from the existing flame. And during Kiddush, after Bori Pri HaGafen, and after Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim, you say Bore Miorei HaEsh on this, just let it burn out. It's a one-time Chad Pami thing. In fact, I just wrote an email to the company suggesting that they add that to the label, a reminder that it can't be, because people will see this and they'll say, oh, look at how cute. They did say that the base is non-flammable. I don't know what it's made out of, but it's a colorful base and three different colored twisted candles. And it's this year's new shtick that you find in all of the stores in Mea Sharim and Geula, and I like it. So I wrote them an excited... they have here a note, which is part of their standard label, which says trim wick after each use. But that contradicts the fact that this is not meant to have repeated use.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see somebody buy this and say, oh, I got one of those special candles, light it, and then blow it out, or, you know, with the wine, or blowing it, which you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. Okay. Here's what I want to say, but I want to lay the foundation. First part of the foundation is this week is Parshat Tazria. It happens to have been my bar mitzvah sedra, together with Mitzora. Anyway, it's why I have an interest in Tazria specifically. And one of the noteworthy things in Tazria is a mitzvah that is there that is not counted from Tazria among 613. It is one of the 613 mitzvot, but it's counted elsewhere. I'm talking about the mitzvah of Brit Milah, circumcision. It says clearly, that's the name of the sedra, Isha ki Tazria, if a woman conceives, v'yolda zachar, and she gives birth to a boy, she is tume'ah for 7 days, like tumat nida, uvayom hashmini yimol bisar orlato, and on the 7th day, you shall circumcise his foreskin. That's clearly a command to perform circumcision. We have the format and the language of a command, and God spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, Uvayom hashmini imo besar orlato. And therefore, at first look, it's a surprise that the very significant, important mitzvah of milah is not counted in Tazria. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Let's pick up that shear where we left off.
Then you remember, but it is counted back in Parshat Lech Lecha, where God tells Avraham Avinu to circumcise himself and the males of his household, and he does at the advanced age of 99, and Yishmael, his son at the time, at the age of 13, and the male servants in his household at whatever age they were. It's not till a year later, when Yitzchak is born, that we have the Brit as we know it, the circumcision of an 8-day-old baby. Now, for one reason, it's okay to have counted Brit Milah back in Parshat Lech Lecha, because it comes first. So the first mention of circumcision is there. That's where it's counted. But that's not enough of a reason, especially since there it's part of a story where you almost have to pick away some of the leaves and see the flower, where we have the language of a command, Himol Lachem Kol Zachar. But still, this looks like the better place to have counted it, because of the way I described it, being after the giving of the Torah, and being in the language of a command, rather than getting lost in a story. However, the reason that we point to Lech Lecha is because it is part of the story, and it's not lost. It's a very essential part of the mitzvah. Now, this is all, as I said, laying the foundation for my new thought, but it's good stuff to think about also. I think of it in the following cute way. We call the mitzvah of circumcision Brit Milah. And that, very interestingly, parallels the two brachot that are recited at a brit. Actually, there are three, the Shechionu, but we'll leave that out. They don't even do the Shechionu in many places outside of Israel. In Israel, it's the custom to say it. But the two brachot of the mitzvah are Al Hamila, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, God who has sanctified us with his mitzvot and commanded us on circumcision, and L'hachniso b'vrito shel Avraham Avinu, to enter him into the covenant of Abraham. Now, what's very noteworthy about that is that we really don't find too many mitzvot. I can only add tefillin, and we'll have to leave that out of the discussion. And talit, but in a different context. It's really Brit Milah that very atypically, if not uniquely, has two brachot of mitzvah. When we read the Megillah or light Hanukkah candles, we say Lahadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah or Al Mikra Megillah, and then a She'osa Nisim Lavoteinu. But that She'osa Nisim Lavoteinu acknowledges the miracles that happened, does not put it in the text of, and God who sanctified us with his mitzvot and commanded us, whatever. There, for Hanukkah candles, for Megillah, there's one bracha of a mitzvah. Here at Brit Milah, you have two brachot of mitzvah with different endings, and also noteworthy is the fact that when the father of the baby does not perform the circumcision himself, which is most common, where he hires a professional mohel and makes that mohel his agent to perform the circumcision, the mohel makes the bracha al hamila, but the father makes the bracha lahachniso bevrito shel Avraham Avinu, implying that these are not just two different ways of saying the same mitzvah. These are two mitzvot that are packaged together in what we call brit milah. And I go back to that two-word phrase because al hamila, on the circumcision, is the second word, brit milah. Brit means covenant, and that's the text of the first bracha, of the second bracha. Lahachniso bivrito shel Avraham Avinu, to enter him into the covenant of Abraham. The fact that the mohel performs the ritual of circumcision and makes the bracha al hamila immediately before he cuts indicates that that aspect of the mitzvah, that part of the mitzvah, or that mitzvah, is performed in the few seconds it takes to remove the foreskin and do whatever else the mohel does in order to fulfill the mitzvah. But the father's immediate other bracha, now I've heard mohalim all tell the fathers, as soon as I finish this bracha, without waiting, you say that bracha, because it is part of the same ceremony, the part of the same mitzvah. But it's very different. The fact that the father, who is not physically performing the milah, makes the bracha lachniso berito shel Avraham Avinu, means he's committing himself, and his wife, by the way, to raise this child as a good Jew. And immediately the congregation assembled for the brit responds, Kishem shenichnas labrit, kein yikones l'torah l'chupa l'masim tovim. I just realized that we don't say kishem, that he had mila. It's just as he entered the brit, the covenant, and that's based on the first word brit of brit mila, and that's based on the second bracha that the father makes. That's the one that we link to Torah, to Chupa, and to Masim Tovim. Not the performance of Mila. When the kid eats matzah after his bar mitzvah, we don't say, oh, Kashem she'ochal matzah, you know, just like he ate matzah, so too he should have Torah, Chupa, and Masim Tovim. We only say that in this context, and you'll see when I finally get to my point that the word Chupa in there turns out to be very significant, which is part of the thought that just occurred to me now, and makes it even better, so I hope you're anticipating. Now, The context, again, of Brit Milah, where we count the mitzvahs, Parshat Lech Lecha. The whole book of Bereshit, 12 sedras, contain only three mitzvot out of the 613. One of them is a prohibition of Gid Hanasha. Let's leave that out of the conversation at the moment. It leaves two mitzvot. One called Pru Uravu, be fruitful and multiply, and one called Brit Milah, circumcision. What's very significant about that is, well, let's break it down. Let's go back to Pru Uravu. God commands all humankind, Pru Uravu, repeats it again when Noach comes out of the Teva, out of the ark with his family, and it's repeated elsewhere as well. But there's an interesting halachic detail here. When the Sefer Achinuch, for example, discusses the applicability of mitzvot, he will tell you to whom this mitzvah applies. So when he talks about tefillin, and he says this mitzvah applies to men, but not to women, we know that. Women are exempt from tefillin. They don't do that mitzvah. When he talks about pru uravu, be fruitful and multiply, he says there, this mitzvah applies to men and not to women. To which the average reader will say, guess what, fellow? Who do you think is involved as an equal or greater partner in the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiply? The woman. So the question, why would the Sefer Achinuch think, or anyone think, that a woman is not obligated on Pru Uravu when she is an essential part of the mitzvah? Let's also leave that out, because that's a technicality of halacha. It has ramifications, but it's a thought, not a thought, it's a detail that will feed the thought that I want to bring out. So even though this will leave you with this nagging question of how come, let's leave that for a moment also. I'm purposely leaving a lot of things out, even though I'm throwing a lot of things in. Brit Milah, obviously, is men and not women. But the question there can be asked, not exactly the same way that you asked it about Pru Uravu, but in a different way, the same question. If Brit Milah is such an important mitzvah, if it's entering into the covenant of Abraham, if it is what characterizes the Jew, I also want to point out that a brit does not make the person Jewish. You don't say, although people do, after a brit, oh, now the kid is Jewish. He was Jewish from the moment he was born, and Brit Milah is a membership right in the Jewish nation. If it's such an important mitzvah, how come it was done in such a way, or how come God organized it, orchestrated it in such a way that it's male only? You can't say because male have a foreskin and women don't. That's not the question. The question is, if it's such an important statement of membership in Klal Yisrael, in the Jewish people, why was there not an extra flap of skin at the tip of the nose that men and women would both be required at age 8 days to remove and thereby enter into the, you know, the symbolic covenant of Abraham and the way that Brit Milah is spoken of. It is a token completion of the human physical form, which symbolizes our challenge of a lifetime of completing our spiritual form. It's all tied together. So the question is not the same, how come women aren't commanded on Pru Uravu when they have to be there? It's how come Brit Milah has nothing to do with women? The answer, I believe, ties in both of them because women have very much to do with Brit Milah. Brit Milah would not have been significant had it been a flap of skin at the tip of the nose. It is no coincidence that God chose the organ of reproduction, which obviously, as a throwback to what I said about be fruitful and multiply, women are equal partners in the reproductive process, if not more than half. And the message then is that both Pru Urvu and Brit Milah are not really individualized to the person, to the man, but they on a, not on a halachic way, but on a concept way, belong to men and women together as a partnership. Let me explain it in the following way. If, coming up to Sukkot, I have a beautiful, perfect etrog, but I wasn't able to obtain the other three species, and you have a phenomenal lulav and hadassim and aravot, but you don't have an etrog, we could make a pact of convenience and practicality whereby both of us will be able to fulfill the mitzvah of the arba minim. It's a deal that we will make. I have a command, you have a command, and both of us have to fulfill that command, and we can only do it in partnership. And therefore we will. Pru Urvu is more than that. Be fruitful and multiply is not everybody has to fulfill the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiply if they're capable. And as a convenience for practical purposes, a guy and a woman will get together in order to each fulfill their requirement of Pru Urvu, then it would be something less than what it is. What it actually is God having created man and, I was going to say man and woman, God having first created an original being that the Torah tells us was Zachar Unakeva, male and female together. He then separated woman from man, and then commanded them to reunite in a marriage, v'hayu l'basar echad, and become one flesh. We say that that one flesh that a man and a woman become after having been physically separated but originally joined is having children. Because the child represents the one being that came from both his father and his mother. So, I was going to say symbolically, it's more than symbolically. In essence, Pru Urvu, be fruitful and multiply, is a command to mankind, which involves, as equal partners, men and women, and their getting together for this purpose is not just a convenient way for each of them to fulfill the mitzvah. It is the way that they fulfill the mitzvah that is to them. In a similar sense, I think of Brit Milah like that. I said before there are reasons, won't go into them, why it's male and not female. But why it's one rather than both of the partners is because essentially this is a package deal which involves not just the person himself, not just the baby himself, but the continuity from generation to generation, which by definition is the partnership of male and female. In fact, another thought just occurred to me. You don't wait till bar mitzvah, like we do with other mitzvot, to let this child fulfill it himself. I mean, obviously, he could eat matzah each year as a katan, a technical child, and then when he becomes a Torah adult, he fulfills it for the first time. Brit Milah doesn't work like that. You only get one shot at it. But why not wait until the kid is 13 for his circumcision so that he will be fulfilling the mitzvah rather than commanding his parents, specifically his father, to circumcise his son? That's the point. It is not a flat mitzvah that an individual in his given time fulfills. It is a mitzvah that recognizes the vertical chain of generations, one generation to the next, and very symbolically, it is the father that is in charge of performing the mitzvah for his helpless 8-day-old son. It's not the reason for all of these details, but it points to this continuity. Now, I have one more thing to add to this, which was my new thought now. And this also, I think, will be interesting on its own, each piece of it. If a non-Jewish man had children when he was not Jewish, and then he converts to Judaism, let's say at age 40, he converts to Judaism. The Shulchan Aruch says, if his children also convert, even though we say there is no halachic relationship now between the father and his children, they're each all like new people, yet we give him credit for having fulfilled the mitzvah of Pru Urevu before he was Jewish. If you can think of another example of this, I doubt it, because I think there ain't none. To actually say, from this point on, you have to keep Shabbos, you have to keep kosher, you have to daven, you have to put on tefillin, you have to do this, you have to do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. But one of the 613 mitzvot called Pru Urvu, be fruitful and multiply, we're going to give credit for the fulfillment of that mitzvah for what you did 10 years ago when you were not Jewish. Add to that one of the commentaries that says, even if the children don't convert, if a non-Jew brought children into this world, even if those children are not Jewish, even if they're idol worshippers, when this man converts to Judaism, in the heavenly record book under Pru Urvu, there's a check mark. And that check mark gives him credit. Why? Because the command of Pru Urvu Umilu et ha'aretz v'chivshuha was given to Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon was not Jewish. Adam HaRishon represents all mankind. There's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, I think, which says, Lo letohu bira'ah, the world was not created to be empty. La shevet yitzara, it was created to be populated. And those who actively populate the world, obviously there's more to it than just that, are given credit to fulfill God's design for this world to be populated by people, hopefully good people, not just Jewish people. But it was not Adam, and not Noach. It was Avraham Avinu, who was the one who was first given the command to circumcise, because that mitzvah is not like Pru Urvu. That mitzvah, a non-Jew who converts to Judaism, does not get credit for it. He comes with his circumcision certificate from the hospital where he was born 35 years later, and they say, I'm sorry, we can't circumcise you again, but you will have to undergo hatafat dam brit, the letting of one drop of blood from the place of Mila, because you need brit Mila now for conversion. That makes it specifically Jewish, no matter who else circumcises. From our perspective, it is a Jewish thing, rather than, as opposed to, in contrast with, Pru Urvu, which is universal. So that's what I wanted to share. And I think it's very special. Now, it doesn't mean that non-Jews don't circumcise. It became fashionable at a certain period, then it was unfashionable, now it's fashionable again, then it's not fashionable again. Even women try to do something equivalent to it, and all of that is beside the point. The point is that it is the male as representative of the males and females of Klal Yisrael, who is the subject of Brit Milah, and at 8 days old, it's hard to take credit for doing it yourself. It's a credit that under normal circumstances goes one generation for the next, and that already tells you a lot.
Not much time left to say too much, but let me just remind you that this particular month of Nisan that's coming up is the first of the Jewish calendar. We count from Tishrei, which is creation of the world, but we count from the Exodus, which is the birth of the Jewish nation. On that note, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, HaChodesh Tov, Lehishtameach.